public gallery this evening, but I'm sure we have some people watching along at home via YouTube. Being 5:30 PM, I now officially declare this meeting open. Wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with council's policy, I'll ask the acting general manager to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Confirm, Mayor.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reid, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening we have the Acting General Manager, Mr Reeve, the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms Shakuti, Manager of Environmental Services, Ms Quinn, Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton, and our Communications and Engagement Support Officer, Ms Klein. We have apologies this evening from the General Manager, from Councillor Antoli and Councillor Richardson. Before we go on to the confirmation of minutes, I just wanted to make mention of the very auspicious occasion that occurred in Denmark overnight with the coronation of Her Royal Highness Queen Mary, who of course is a former resident of Kingborough, having grown up in Tarouna and attended school in Tarouna as well. And I know that there are many residents throughout the municipality that are very excited about her elevation to a queen, and we have been flying. Councillor Street is giving me looks right now that says I can't believe she's saying this. We have been flying the Danish flag over the weekend and today as a mark of respect, but I am sure that everybody here wishes her Royal Highness the very best in her new role. It is very exciting for Tasmania to have a somebody who was born in our own municipality who has gone on to become a queen. It was exciting enough when she was a princess, but now we can proudly say that we are the home municipality of the Queen of Denmark. So we wish her all the very best on behalf of our residents. Can I now move to page one, confirmation of minutes? I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please, that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 24, held on the 18th of December 2023, be confirmed as a true record. Mover in Councillor Fox, seconder in Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. A workshops held since the last council meeting. There have been no workshops held since the last council meeting. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? No, thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor wishes to transfer from closed into open session or vice versa? No, thank you. We don't have any members of the public here, so there are no questions without notice from the public, which takes us to questions on notice from the public. And if you do wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the form on our website or by emailing us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We had five questions. The first from Mr Biggins in relation to the Greater Hobart Bushfire Index with an officer response from Ms Loxley. The second from Ms Lyons in relation to North West Bay Cemetery with an officer's response from Mr Basham. The third one was from Ms Coates in relation to the development application for proposed oyster processing use and development with a response from Ms Shakuti. The fourth one in relation to a development application at Benbow's Road, Oyster Cove, from Mr Cree, with an officer's response from Ms Shakuti. And the fifth one from Ms Landon in relation to local provision schedule, with an officer response from Ms Shakuti as well. Takes us to page five, questions without notice and councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Happy New Year to one and all. And my first question is just about ramp access on local links on our footpaths. So recently I raised the issue of a particular area in Kingborough where one of the local link footpaths had a few steps which were impeding access to people who required mobility aids or who have prams. My question is actually more broad than one particular area. My question is just about, does council have plans to try and upgrade those steps to ramps everywhere throughout the municipality, or is there a set of criteria or a hierarchy or some kind of a, I guess, a strategy around making the local links more accessible?
Thank you. I'll ask Mr. Reeve to address that, but in doing so, I'd suggest, because it is something that has been discussed in the past at the Access Committee that I chair, and some of the issues with those local links would be the gradient of those tracks, where they're linking, you know, particularly steep sections of roads. So they would be unsuitable to have access ramps in them because you couldn't get them at the gradient. They would, in fact, be dangerous for people with mobility devices to use. But I'll ask Mr. Reeve if he could provide some more information.
Through you, Mayor, yes, that's correct. There's a number around the place which, unfortunately, due to the topography, so either due to the fact it's the steepness of the grade or the fact that it's constrained, so quite often right-of-ways between streets here are quite constrained in their width, which what that means is that if you're actually trying to get a ramp in accordance with the Australian standards, it's just not possible. If it is, it's very difficult to do without actually acquisitions or compromising the use for the rest of the people accessing that. So for any new installations that we actually put in place, we obviously look at the various Australian standards there, and the first thing you try and do is make sure that all paths are accessible where they can be. But the Mayor is correct. We also don't want to put in facilities there that end up being unsafer for people to use.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. Look, I do have a couple of questions just about the news that landed just before Christmas that Kingborough lost out to Clarence in relation to the AFL High Performance Centre. I imagine there's a fair bit of interest on this around the community. So the first of this relates to the comparison table that Kingborough Council released. That was on our website and put out as part of the media release. And those that would have read it probably would have made the assumption that I did, that ours was a better bid. It was far stronger. So I'd just be interested, given that the comparison was out there and those in the community would have seen it and probably felt like Kingborough was a stronger bid, what the feedback was as to why Kingborough lost out to Clarence.
Thank you for the question. Yes, it's fair to say that there was a great deal of disappointment when we received the news on the 22nd of December that we weren't successful with the High Performance Centre. We read it in the Mercury on that Friday, like everybody else, and I did receive a phone call the evening prior to that from Minister Street informing me that we weren't successful. I was advised that we did put in a very, very thorough bid and a very high standard bid, and I think I've placed on record previously my appreciation to our staff who worked on that, because I do believe that we ticked all of the boxes. My understanding from my conversation with the Minister is that the main criteria that we didn't satisfy is that we weren't close enough to the airport. The airport wasn't actually specifically named in the 15 criteria. It talked about access to transport and other infrastructure, and it's my understanding from having read the media commentary that access to the close proximity of Rosny to the airport combined with the proximity to Eastlands was appealing for the selection process. We have asked for some formal feedback to be provided from the assessment panel. Now that we have most staff back at work, we're hoping to request that and receive that in the coming weeks, because I was a little concerned that there were some comments made about the process that suggested that it was necessary to have some competitive tension in the process, and that's why it was great we put in a bid. My response to that would be that I'd hate to think that we were used as a bargaining tool with the Clarence City Council, and I would hope that our very, very good submission was given the consideration that it deserved.
And yeah, I guess just to follow up on our submission, as you pointed out, it clearly was an excellent submission that took our staff a lot of time and effort to put together, and a lot of consultation with clubs as well, who are fully on board. I note that in that article from the 22nd in the Mercury that the minister did acknowledge the calibre of our bid. But I did have a question because he's kind of quoted as saying that he looks forward to continuing discussions with our council regarding future opportunities at the Kingborough Sports Precinct. So I feel like that's a fairly strong acknowledgement of our work, and I'm just wondering whether there's been, or maybe the community has can expect any future commitments coming from the government, given that we've come second best.
Yep. Look, certainly in the discussions leading up to the announcement, and then when I was given the news by the minister about us being unsuccessful, I did continue to push the case that Kingborough has some significant issues when it comes to, a crowding of our existing facilities, both in terms of the availability of ovals for cricket and football, but also the difficulties that we're having with overcrowding at the Kingborough Sports Centre, and the fact that we've been putting up that project in particular for many, many years now to successive elections, both state and federal, and we haven't been able to secure any funding. That's very, very frustrating indeed. So I would like to think that there is some recognition now from the state government that we are in fact a regional sports hub here at the Kingborough Sports Centre, and that they will enter into some serious discussions with us about how we can expand the offerings up in that area, because I think we all know we've outgrown it. The demand is going to continue to outstrip the capacity of the sports centre and the ovals, so I would hope that this does provide us with an opportunity to open up that dialogue. And certainly in a brief discussion that I had with Minister Street at our awards ceremony last Saturday, a week ago, I did say to him that I was very keen to start those discussions, and so hopefully when he returns from leave we'll have a meeting to try and progress what it is that we would like to see.
If I may just have one final question. If you read Clarence's proposal, as you obviously did, because you pointed out quite clearly there were some fairly major hurdles that their proposal had, were there any discussions with the Minister, I suppose, about one, if they aren't able to meet the 24-month deadline, which is obviously a fairly tight deadline, whether we would be considered as a second option or a backup option if it does prove too difficult, and whether our council is considered, whether we would then take that on further down the track if we were to be considered as a backup?
Certainly, I do think that, I wish Clarence all the best now, and I do hope that they are able to fulfil what they have set out to achieve, but I do think that there are some obstacles that are ahead of them in terms of rezoning as well as actually then the construction. I think they also still have the issue of the vote was only 7-5 in favour of the facility being built there, and over the Christmas break I've been approached by quite a few people who live on the Eastern Shore who are very, very against it and who are very concerned about it, including relatives of Charles Hand Park, who were never informed or asked for any opinion about what they thought about it being there. So I think there are some hurdles, but certainly given the state of the facility, the high quality of facilities that we have here, it would be remiss of us not to say, well, our door is still open if it falls over at Clarence. But as I said, I hope that isn't the case. But, you know, there are some challenges ahead for them, and, I wish them all the best, but we're certainly not taking our bat and ball and going home. We would certainly be open to it. I do note with some interest, and this did take me by surprise, that the timelines that we had been provided with by the Department of State Growth suggested that the facility needed to be up and running by September, October 2025. And I note in the media article, it seems that the Clarence Council have put in a submission which suggests that it will be ready in March 2026. So the goalposts shifted, which is somewhat alarming that the facility, I don't know what's going to happen then to the VFL teams where they will train in the meantime, but it seems the goalposts shifted in that respect. We could have certainly met the timeframes. Clearly Clarence couldn't, and they needed that additional time.
Thank you so much for some excellent answers. Cheers.
Thank you. Any further questions? If not, we'll move on to questions on notice from councillors. The first one was from Councillor Cordover in relation to road safety in Van Maury Road with a response from Mr Reeve. And the second one was a question also from Councillor Cordover in relation to climate action with a response from Ms Shakuti. We will not be moving into planning authority now as the report for the application for the planning application to construct a wall on some external boundaries at 13 Christopher's Way, Kingston Beach, has been withdrawn by the applicant. So that takes us to page 23. Petition still being actioned, a report on the Snug to Conyngham shared pathway will be presented to Council in the near future. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received, which takes us to officers' reports to Council. Policy 4.13, establishment of bushfire hazard management areas on Council land, with a recommendation on page 26. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Mover in Councillor Midgley. Seconder in Councillor Cordover. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So this policy that we have tonight is all about managing bushfire risk on council-owned land. It's about mitigation, environmental protection for natural resources and managing. And there's lots of links and things to the planning area. So this policy is not a new policy. It was developed in 2017 and updated in 21 following a council workshop. It's a hazard management area. It's required to ensure that potential bushfire fuel surrounding a dwelling in bushfire-prone area is minimised. And the hazard management areas are defined as the area between a habitable building or building area and bushfire-prone vegetation, which provides access to a fire front for firefighting, which is maintained in a minimal fuel condition in which there are no other hazards present, which will significantly contribute to the spread of a bushfire. The Planning Directive Number 5.1 Bushfire Prone Areas Code. A couple of other areas I thought good to read out was the policy was originally developed with technical input from staff, neighbouring councils and the Tasmanian Fire Service. It was peer-reviewed as part of the 2021 review by a bushfire management consultant. And the approach the policy takes is similar to other councils and state government agencies, which have policy-driven standards that are mandatory imposed on the developers of new buildings in bushfire-prone areas. A couple of other points that I thought were good to point out were, in particular, the HMAs on council land, and in particular natural area reserves, requires vegetation thinning, tree and shrub removal, and annual maintenance to ensure minimal fuel conditions. So that's that impact on the environment or concern of the environment, and the vegetation removal negatively impacts the biodiversity and ecological values of the reserve. So the policy aims to reduce this negative impact by ensuring the creation of HMAs outside the council's firebreak network are minimised in number and context. I thought also, looking at my notes, it also gives a good summary of the use of the policy in 5.3. It says, since 2021, Council has received 6 requests to establish a HMA on Council land. None of these requests were approved. However, 2 new dwellings were approved to rely on existing reserve firebreaks, and the remaining development proposals all proceeded with changes to design and location of buildings to achieve the required bushfire management plan for the development. So a couple of little points that I had as well. The policy also sets up criteria to ensure that any request for a new HMA on council land is consistently assessed and the work is managed by council and the costs are borne by the applicant. So the applicant's provided this policy and all the information if, therefore, it meets that criteria. The policy now has been, I guess some of the language has been minimised to make it read, I guess, a bit easier, taking lots of words out there, unnecessary words perhaps. The other points that I had, just a couple of questions. So noting that we didn't doesn't look like we've engaged with TasFire or any bushfire consultant as development of this policy review through you, Mayor. Just wondering about that.
Ms Quinn.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. No, that's correct. We haven't, and that's because there's been no technical changes to the policy. So, yeah, we didn't see any need to.
Yep. And under the definition section on page 27, I noted that we've taken out... Oh, sorry. Actually, I think it's in there. Sorry, don't know if I've got the right page there. For some reason I thought... Oh, sorry, it's in the legislation. In the legislation section, we have taken out the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015, but yet we talk about it in the definitions. I just wondered... It's only a little small thing. I just wondered why.
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, that's correct. Yeah, I did. It's in 8.2 under legislation. The planning scheme's still there. It's potentially, with all the track changes, been difficult to see. So under legislation, 8.2 reads other relevant legislation and the planning scheme's there.
Oh, okay.
Is
yep.
that
yep.
that answers the question?
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you, Mayor. And just in under related documents as well, I just wondered, why we've omitted some of the other documents that are there, like the biodiversity offset policy and all the others.
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, I think because the biodiversity offset policy is still there, and I'm wondering if because the track there were so many track changes in simplifying the document that so the under related documents, the offset policy is there at 9.7 in my version.
In the updated version, sorry, I didn't... Okay.
So many changes meant that things moved around so much it would have been quite difficult to read. So in the updated version, without the track changes, you'll see that quite a lot of those documents are there. So I just removed documents where I thought there was overlap, where they weren't mentioned within the document or weren't particularly relevant.
Thank you. And I guess just from a, we know that in the world of planning that often people talk about the different forms and paperwork and bushfire criteria people need to meet. I guess have we had any kind of people ask questions about this policy in the past or any comments from the public?
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, we've had lots of discussions with applicants about the policy, but it does follow a fairly well-known, because it uses the General Manager's consent for doing works on council land, which of course is used by developers for a full range of reasons, and this is just one of them, it is a fairly well-known process. As soon as an applicant is relying on council land for any part of their development, which could just be a road crossover, could be something quite simple, but in this situation obviously something more significant, they need to gain the general manager's consent, and there's a process to follow with that. So there hasn't been a lot of confusion about it that I've come across. Yeah, it is really... because we have such a significant fuel break network in Kingborough that council maintains all the time, and it's across our reserve estate. We've got probably about around 40 fuel breaks across our reserve estate that are there and maintained by council. This is for those really unusual situations where there's a lot of vacant land that was created before 2015 and someone's going to build a house or wants to put units or something on it. So it doesn't actually come up as often as you'd think.
Councillor Midgley, anything further? No. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to raise... Shall I leave it to... Okay, we're just looking for where it does mention the biodiversity offset policy. So Councillor Fox rightly pointed out that on page 31 of our agenda, we can see where it's been taken out in the track changes version, but we're just looking for it in the final version that we have in our council papers.
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. So it is in... It's under related documents and it's 9.7.
On page 35...
It's got a different version going on. Okay.
9.1, that's the last one.
Okay, so we might have a different version, I'm thinking.
In which case we may have to defer, move to defer perhaps, or...
So the version that we've got is version 3, ECM file number 12.257, version 3. Is that the incorrect version?
No. So you're right. I've got the wrong the wrong version, sorry. You're right, it's not there. And thinking... now instead of looking for it, I'm actually thinking about why I took it out. So... because people are actually... Offsets aren't relevant biodiversity offsets aren't relevant in these situations because the people are actually asking to clear council land. So biodiversity offsets are about private land. So they're where someone wants to do a development on their own land, clear native vegetation. Sure, we're all quite familiar with how the biodiversity offset works in the planning scheme. So in this situation, they're actually asking council to clear its land for their development. And, yeah, that's why I took it out now, I'm remembering. Yeah.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. A few questions about, broadly, I think just to start off, the report makes note that the policy objective, scope and procedure remain largely unchanged and fit for purpose. The policy's been shortened to improve readability. My question is around other councils, because obviously Kingberry isn't the only bushfire-prone council out there. Is this policy fairly similar to other councils in southern Tasmania? And if not, what are some of those key differences?
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, this policy is really similar to the City of Hobart's policy, which is available on their website. The main change with our policy is it only requires people to build to BOW 29. So if we do agree, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to build a dwelling, if we do agree to create a new hazard management area on our land, we ask that they build to BOW 29. The City of Hobart policy asks them to build to BOW 40, so in some ways you could say a more expensive build because the design criteria, because BOW 40 is flame zone, so more building design required to build a home to that standard. Other than that, it's very, very similar. The Clarence and Glenorchy don't have a similar policy, but they do have a very well-established fuel break system throughout all their reserves as well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor. My next question was about, in terms of the costs borne by the applicant, I'm just interested to know, is there a typical ballpark figure around what those costs might be, or I assume that it will be very much a case-by-case basis, but I'd just be interested if there's any feedback on ballpark figures.
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. No, you're exactly right, there isn't, because it depends on how much land's been cleared. So generally the costs that are involved, so the applicant, of course, like they would if it was their own land, they have to have a consultant, a bushfire practitioner, determine how big this hazard management area needs to be, so that there's a report in that. And then generally if that is approved by council, then they would pay the costs of the initial clearing and then an annual fee, which is generally brush cutting. So you can imagine they're clearing vegetation, that could be a small amount or a large amount, and then annual maintenance, and sometimes twice a season, yeah, to make sure that it's in a minimal fuel condition. So it's not most of them, so we have five, and they're generally, you know, the initial costs would generally all have been under around $5,000-$6,000. So somewhere there or less, and then you're talking about the cost of a contractor to brush cut them, yeah, twice a year.
Thank you.
And Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor. Through you, my final question is just about this notion of exposure. So the way I read this report is part of the reason why it's really important that council minimises the amount of HMAs on council land is in addition to there's obviously environmental consequences from all of this. There's obviously other consequences, but really importantly is the, insurance and liability exposure. So I just wanted to get a sense of if we've got 40 fuel breaks and we have... I'm trying to get a sense of how exposed is council by the ones that we already have granted, and is that a lingering exposure that we have, and is there any way of... making that exposure borne by the people who need them rather than borne by the council, I guess, so to speak.
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, there is absolutely exposure or liability for council in maintaining a network of fuel breaks, but there is equal exposure to council of not. So the Local Government Act does require us to manage the risk of fire leaving our land. So to do that, it is very common practice to have fuel breaks in our reserves. We have a system in place, an ongoing contract, that those breaks are slashed twice a year within the bushfire season. So that's how we manage that liability, is we have the breaks in place. We make sure that those breaks are to standard. We have a bushfire management officer, or will very soon, hopefully. And a contract to make sure they are flashed. It is critical that they are maintained in a minimal fuel condition. In saying that, our previous bushfire officer, when she left in July last year, said there has never been a case in Australia where a local government has been held accountable for having a break or not having a break and not having it maintained. So that's not to say they're not really important to protect the community, but there hasn't been a case where a council has been held liable.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My final question is actually then, if Hobart City Council sets their BOWL minimums to 40, which seems like a lot to me, are they doing that because of liability, because of exposure to that liability, and would we actually be safer as an organisation if we were to head down that path? Are they limiting their risk by requiring higher standards?
Through you, Mayor, that's definitely a question for the City of Hobart and not for me to answer. But generally, what a BOWL 40 means is that someone's making their house prepared for a higher rating of heat, basically. So what it does, by saying someone needs to build a BOWL 40, it means you need to clear less vegetation. So the hazard management area is smaller if the house is built to a higher standard. That is not only building standard, it's also where the house is sited. So, for example, the house might need to be further away from the bushland, closer to the front of the road. Maybe that's not someone's preference. Or built in a different way, constructed in a different way, sited differently. And so by having BOWL 29, that was something that was that the Tasmanian Fire Service recommended we did when we first developed the policy. And so it's more of a middle ground to make sure that that cost is shared. So we're not saying you must build to BOWL 40 because you've found yourself in a situation where you've bought a vacant lot that was before the standards came into place. So it's trying to find a middle ground between the landowner and council.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, I'd just like to say thank you for all of those answers and for the work that's gone into this. I think it's an important policy, and council is always about trying to strike that balance, making sure that everybody remains safe, factoring in environmental factors, and trying to protect what makes Kingborough such an amazing place to live, and also to have plans for the future that are robust and fit for purpose. So I thank everyone for the work involved, and I look forward to supporting this.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Any further speakers? Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up? Okay, I'll put the recommendation then as printed on the screen. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Next, we have an item that was actually omitted from the agenda, although you do have the papers there. It's the appendices. So I will need a mover and a seconder to note the appendices. Mover in Councillor Street, seconder in Councillor Dean. Any questions? Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor. I had a question about the Safety Committee meeting minutes.
Yep.
And the question is around, it was on page 45, that Kingston Police now has a dedicated monitoring room for watching CCTV, mm-hmm. and they're asking for volunteers. The volunteers require a full police record check. Initially, I was thinking, do volunteers get extra social credit score for participating? But my actual questions on this are, who owns those cameras that the police are now inviting people to monitor? Are they Kingborough's CCTV cameras, for example, at the beach and at Kingston Park?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are. They are our cameras.
Thanks. So I guess because I have reservations around, I have concern around the process for who the volunteers are going to be who are volunteering to monitor CCTV cameras around Kingborough. And also around the evidence of what these CCTV cameras are trying to achieve. Is there any, and I know that I would hope that we're working with Tasmania Police and that there's some rigour around this, but is there any available information that Tasmania Police or Kingborough Council has on the public record that demonstrates the effectiveness of CCTV and demonstrates that having volunteers monitoring the CCTV at the beach or at Kingston Park will actually go any way to achieving safety outcomes?
Look, if I hadn't been unwell last week and I'd had my meeting with our Inspector Riley, then I probably could have provided you with some more information in relation to this. But the background is that when Inspector Riley started in the role middle of last year, one of the things that I raised with him was the concerns that Council had invested significantly in CCTV at a number of locations, and whenever there was, and those cameras are located at the police station, and it seemed that whenever there was an incident and they would need to go in and have a look to try and retrieve footage, the cameras were not operating. And it was thanks to Inspector Riley that we've now got most of them back up and running, and he believed that it would be advantageous to have people in there monitoring them and being able to provide information on any live incidences that might be occurring. And so he's been working with the safety committee on discussions around whether, you know, any of those members might seek to volunteer, because the reality is, unfortunately, that the staffing arrangements at the police station don't allow them time to actually actively monitor the cameras. It's my understanding that there are other locations and other police stations where active monitoring does occur, but I couldn't tell you in what way it occurs. So that's why he's decided to go down that path. I don't think that the advertising has taken place as yet. I'm not sure if the Deputy Mayor's aware. No. So, look, as I said, I was due to meet with him last week, but I was away sick, so hopefully I can get some further details from him when we meet.
Thank you kindly, Mayor. And just a follow-up to this is that we now have, if my understanding is correct, that this is a program that will allow volunteers to monitor CCTV cameras in Kingborough, and the prerequisite is for a full police check, a police history check. But what diversity, racism and profile training will these volunteers be doing? Will Kingborough Council be encouraging Tasmania Police to ensure that these volunteers are not just profiling people? I mean, one anecdote that I'm very familiar with, I mean, it took place in a workplace, was where on CCTV, somebody down the street there had been some crime, and the person who had the CCTV footage said, there was a person there wearing a hoodie. We think we've got our culprit. Mm-hmm. Now, as it turned out, that person was there at a completely different time from when the crime took place, and it was just somebody's predilection for profiling that allowed that to take place. And then what happened to that individual who was profiled? They were, you know, they had to engage with law enforcement on the wrong terms, and that can, for people in vulnerable communities, be very damaging. It can be very damaging for whole communities. So my question is, what rigour will we apply to this program to protect vulnerable communities, to protect First Nations people, to protect people from lower socioeconomic demographics, to protect people who are vulnerable and who have been overexposed to the wrong type of law enforcement for a long time in their communities? What are we actually doing to provide rigour around this program?
Thank you for that question. That's certainly one that I will put to Inspector Riley when I do meet with him. But can I just say that I think the purpose of having the volunteers monitor the cameras is twofold. One is to ensure that all the cameras are working at all times, which hasn't been the case in the past, as I indicated. And the second one is to alert a member of Kingston Police if there is an issue. It's not for, so if they witness an altercation or something like that and note down the date or the time of it, and then draw that to the attention of one of the police officers. It's not to create, I guess, pseudo police from the volunteers, but for them to be able to pass on to say, look, we believe that we've just seen an incident take place at Kingston Beach, and then they can rewind the footage and show it to the police, and for the police, with all the extensive training that they've done, to make the judgment about what has occurred. So we're certainly not trying to create another layer of volunteer police, if you like. It's more one of ensuring the system's ongoing operational function.
Thank you, ma'am.
Any further questions in relation to the appendices? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a note, you were very busy in November and December.
No wonder I got sick last week.
Yes. So thank you very much for representing us on all those occasions, and the Deputy Mayor as well noted. Just at the last Kingborough Bicycle Advisory Committee, it was noted by one of the members, they asked, you know, how do the minutes come to council? And I said they're in an appendix, people can ask questions, and they said it would be great if perhaps, you know, as the chair of the meeting, that I highlight some of the things that we talk about. So,
so here's your infomercial.
So here's my little infomercial.
Okay.
Not that much, don't worry, I won't go
I'm
on.
Sure but I thought... I'm sure there'll be a question in here somewhere, but...
Oh, we've got to ask a question. Oh, that's right, a question. Okay, so do you think, Mayor, that it's a good idea if we're the chair of the committee that we should perhaps give a quick summary, or are we just happy for people just to read that?
I'd be more than happy
agenda.
For you to draw a couple of those things to our attention.
Thank you. I encourage others to do so if they are chair, because we do read them, but perhaps we don't highlight some of the key changes or discussions that might have been made at those meetings.
Yep, sure.
So just wanted to note a couple of things the KBAC committee is working on and with staff is around the positive provisioning policy, and there is a draft document that staff are looking at for that, and that's a big item that the committee is really passionate about. I don't know if the Mayor has heard anything about the Channel Trail, Kingston to Margate, noting that it was a while ago.
It is still sitting in Minister Ferguson's office. From every time I ask, I get the same response that it has not been released. So I don't know whether they're waiting for an election or, I don't know. But it continues to cause a little bit of frustration, I think, by people who are... not only the biking community, but people who are landowners who might be affected by it.
I thought something for councillors to note if they hadn't read this, but basically the Action 19, the pathway connections that were funded in the 20 were to be funded in this budget, that it's being deferred for a year pending stormwater considerations, but the design will still occur. So I think that's important to note in case it comes forward to us again. Mm-hmm. And something else the bike committee's been really passionate about is the Roslyn Avenue design. They've taken a lot of time to meet discussing that because they feel that it is quite a safety issue for cyclists in our community outside the Mountain View childcare centre there. I don't know if anybody's ridden there, but yeah, get on your bike and ride uphill there when there's a busy morning or afternoon. It's one of the scariest places to ride. So they've had a look at some designs. They're very expensive in regards to implementing that, so hopefully one day maybe looking at funding, but also they're looking at a grant application submitted for safe passing distance signage to be installed on the uphill section as an interim measure. So I thought that's important for us to know. And then I don't know if anybody was aware of that one as well, the correspondence, and I don't know what we're looking at for this actually. I can't remember, but we're in page 55, number 4, Michael Ferguson MP has a grant program looking at creative road safety ideas in Tasmania. I'm not sure what we're looking for that one for, Mayor. I can't remember, but I'm not sure if Acting General Manager might know.
Mr. Reeve.
Mayor. Look, there's a couple of grants sitting in the cycling arena at the moment, so in different grant streams. So we've just put in a couple there that include down in the snug area, so to look at some feasibility for Davies Road down to Station Road, for example. There's one that's in another grant stream that'll go forward, which will look at continuing the Whitewater Path up through to the KFC roundabout, and there was another one and it slipped my mind, but there is a couple of different avenues to actually put in for grant funding at the moment there, and we've certainly submitted it for those particular ones.
Great, Thank you. And just the last one as well, draw Council's attention to the capital work project bids. They'll be coming to us soon. Mm-hmm. Excellent bids put forward there. And again, just I'm not sure how other committees do this, but we have quite a bit of a process where we discuss the different projects and then the committee actually votes on what they see as the priorities are. So everybody has a great input. And the committee wanted to walk the Main Street Kingston, and I had to ask a question in regards to that. But basically there was lots of comments and questions around like the cycling bike rack infrastructure and if the bike rack infrastructures, which I think was agreed upon at last council meeting when I asked, if so the bike racks rather than the fancy stylised ones, if we could have just really practical ones, and if the committee could perhaps see what infrastructure will be put in place. So thank you. Always happy to answer any questions about the bike committee.
Thank you. Further questions? Councillor Dean.
Yeah, just the one question about your diary. It's going back a while now, so from the 6th of December when you met with the Chair of the Board of Homes Tasmania, Michelle Adair, and so I'm just wondering if there's anything from that meeting that being the Chair of a board of, that helps deliver social and affordable housing in Tasmania, whether there was anything that the community might be interested in hearing, any developments in that space that might be worth sharing.
Yep. Thank you. Look, we had an interesting discussion about what Homes Tasmania has achieved already, and also it was an opportunity for me to provide some feedback from a local government perspective on some proposals that I know that in other council areas that Homes Tasmania has put forward for social housing, social and affordable housing, where the designs probably aren't what you would expect in contemporary planning in terms of, whilst we've tried to move away from broadacre social housing, there was an example given from Clarence where the CEO over there shared with us at Greater Hobart Mayors that there was a proposal that came for some housing, social and affordable housing, and it was quite a large number of units, and they created a cul-de-sac. And it's not seen to be good practice to actually do that in terms of the livability and access and so on. And so they suggested back to Homes Tasmania that they could, if they just took out one property, that they could then create a through road and it would create a better feel for that area. And it wasn't accepted by Homes Tasmania, so it's really interesting that some of the designs, because they're under so much pressure to provide the number of houses that they are, that perhaps there's a slip away from what's the best standard and best practice. And I know that the Chair has come from New South Wales, where she has done a significant amount of work in the last 6 or 7 years in not only the social and affordable housing area, but what is actually of a high standard for to get the best for the residents. So that was an interesting conversation. And we just talked about, you know, how local governments could assist in by looking at the parcels of land that we had available, and I assured her that we had certainly gone through all the land holdings that we did have several years ago and provided the state government then with a list of what we had and what might be suitable. And really there was, apart from, well, there was nothing of any large scale that council owned that we could contribute. But it was certainly an interesting discussion to know where they are at. Any further discussions, questions? Okay, so I will put that as moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Dean that the appendices be received and noted. All in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 36. There were no notices of motion. And that takes us to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session, which is just confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. So in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures, Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority moved into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation minutes and leave of absence. Looking for a mover and a seconder, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. That brings us to the end of the meeting. In accordance with the Kimberley Council's Meetings Audio Recordings Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Thank you to